I had nothing to compare it with. I don't know whether we were had extra piled on us or not. I just know that I was, as soon as I got on and sat and started hearing these cases, I was assigned the same as the other members of the court who were there. But
did you remember?
The thing that I remember most, Giles Kavanaugh, of course you know him well, Thomas Giles Kavanaugh was Chief Justice. And one of the most gracious people in the world. And when he called me over and we started talking, I think almost immediately, in spite of our partisan political differences, which frankly were not matters of concern to either one of us, but he was very friendly and helpful. Every member of that court was there. I did not feel, except very briefly, I think Justice Williams may have been a little bit cool to my appointment at the beginning, but very frankly, I think that melted away. It wasn't that we didn't have our differences, but and we did, and I had my differences with Chief Justice Kavanaugh. But those were differences based on our philosophy of what the law was and what the law ought to be, and the differences were really on a high level. We didn't have personality conflicts, in my recollection.
In philosophical orientation, let's call it that, the split basically, I don't mean to put words into your take here, but so that it can be understood, because I want to ask you about the differences between mm-hmm. this period and some other mm-hmm. experience that the court had. But there was, once you were set on the court, there was yourself, Jim Ryan, Justice Ryan.
No, he wasn't on yet. Okay. Myself, Justice Fitzgerald, and Justice Coleman.
Oh, right. And so
sort of shared a philosophy. Now, we had differences between ourselves, too. Mm-hmm. But basically, the three of us would look at an approach to a legal problem in much the same manner. And on the other side, basically, Justice Thomas Giles Kavanaugh, Justice Williams, Justice Swainson, and Justice Levin were looked at things a little bit differently. And although, you know, if you did it just numerically, probably the number of times in which we all agreed, or at least the agreement broke down this philosophical division, if you can call it that, were much, much more frequent than the times in which we split into those two groups. And when we did split into those groups, there was no bitterness or rancor. Or I have heard stories about the table-pounding times and justices not speaking to each other and so forth in the past. That did not happen while I was there at all. The differences that we had were differences relegated to the work that we were doing. They were not personality differences. I think we all had a pretty high level of mutual respect. I remember telling Giles that I thought he was a hell of a guy if he could just get his head screwed on right.
But he never did.
And, you know, and he'd laugh, and he'd say the same thing to me. But we had some things to highlight it. I remember we were arguing about an issue, and the issue was whether or not the court should consider what some of its members regarded to be an error in the trial when the basis of that error had not been preserved for appeal. They found something that one of the lawyers had done that they thought that lawyer shouldn't have done, but the lawyer on the other side didn't object to it. And I took the position that if the lawyer on the other side hadn't objected to it and the court had not made any exception on it, that the matter was not preserved, that we shouldn't try to look into it.
This was an orthodox position at that time, was it not?
Well, I don't know whether it was orthodox or not, because it was a position. And I remember Soapy Williams was championing the change that we ought to consider this thing and we ought to reverse it. This was a criminal matter. We ought to reverse the conviction because this error had taken place in the trial. And I remember the discussion on that thing, because I felt for the first time that I was getting through to Soapy on something. I said, you know, in the course of a trial, loads of things happen. You don't want to object to everything. Sometimes, as a tactic, you won't object because you anticipate that what is going to happen in the response to which you might otherwise have objected is going to help your cause. And I said, if you give the trial attorney the chance to withhold his objection so that he gets the chance of getting that bonus in the trial that he thinks the answer will bring, and then in spite of the fact that he hasn't objected, you later on say that question should not have been asked, or that answer should not have been given, or whatever you say that indicates that you find an error there. You're giving the guy two shots at it. He succeeds the first time, or he doesn't succeed the first time, but he runs that risk because he wants to get that answer in there even though it's objectionable. Now, you find that it's objectionable, but he didn't object to it, so you're going to reverse the thing anyway. And I said, that gives him a no-lose situation. And I said, that is not, in my judgment, the way the thing ought to be done.
Did you win the argument?
I
bet not.
I'm not sure that I won it in that case. But I remember Soapy came down to my office subsequent to that discussion and brought it up again, and we discussed it further at some length. And I think, really, he had a better idea of what I was saying after we discussed it the second time, probably because I wasn't sufficiently articulate the first time. But And I'm not at all certain that it didn't have, in the long term, some effect on his thinking. I don't know whether it did or not.
I heard something happen here.
That may have been my shoe.
Oh. I'm nervous about the time here. Maybe I ought to stop and turn it over anyways,
okay,
rather than risk it. I want to pursue this a little bit further, if you don't mind.